Tyler, do you have an answer to this? For us on the...
We don't have any appeals on formal airports for chapter 22.
So that's... So those rules will be effective.
Ms. Rock.
Thank you, good afternoon. I'm appearing today on behalf of Skip Williamson, and I have with me Mr. Quinn, who will be presenting landscape evidence, and Mr. Vivian, who will present planning evidence. So you should have received a copy of my submissions, and I've also handed up a copy of the plan that was attached to the further submission filed by Skip Williamson. And also, while I'm going through my submissions, it would be quite handy if you had in front of you Appendix 1 of Mr. Quinn's evidence.
Just on the first map you referred to, can I just clarify? It says in the bottom left-hand corner, shows the area in pink, and then it says, if not successful, the submitter would like to see this area zoned to rural general as per the ODP. Is that, when it refers to the submitter, is to back to Skip Williamson, the further submitter?
Millbrook.
That's Millbrook.
Yes, so this plan was attached to the further submission, essentially showing the relief sought by Millbrook.
Right, so Millbrook is the submitter.
Yes, so on that plan it shows the proposed boundary of Skip Williamson's land, well no, the property boundary of Skip Williamson's land in blue, the lifestyle precinct as notified in green, and then the yellow line is the 440 contour, which is where Millbrook requested the zone boundary be pulled down to. The pink area is the area identified in the Millbrook submission, which is only part of Skip Williamson's land. So I'll start at paragraph 1. These legal submissions are presented on behalf of Skip Williamson. She lodged a submission and further submission on stage 2 of the proposed district plan, topic 14. She also lodged a submission on stage 1, which was supported by a landscape report prepared by Vivian Inespe. Williamson lodged these submissions in relation to land which she has an interest in on Mooney Road, and I've set out the legal description of that land in paragraph 3. The stage 1 submission sought a rural lifestyle zoning over the elevated area within the land, including some of the rollover slopes at the edges of Whirinui Hills, and applied a building restriction area to some of the rollover areas. So her land had been proposed to be notified under Stage 1 as a mixture of rural lifestyle and rural. So she essentially sought to extend that rural lifestyle zoning over her land. Her submission 2272 supported the notified Wakatipu Basin Lifestyle Precinct over the land, subject to refinements. Those refinements sought to move the precinct boundary in accordance with the submission lodged on stage 1. A submission lodged by Millbrook opposes parts of the land being identified within the precinct zone. The areas of the land that are affected by the Millbrook opposing submission are hatched red on the plan attached, which I've handed out. Sorry, it's not really red, it's more pink. So that's this plan that we were first talking about. Council did not notify the Millbrook submission before the first hearing for topic 14, and the Millbrook submission was notified after the hearing, and Williamson lodged the further submission. The Millbrook submission sought to oppose a number of precinct zonings adjacent to the Millbrook Resort Zone. In particular, Millbrook sought that the land above the 440 contour on specific precinct properties be amended to the Wakatipu Basin Rural Amenity Zone. And that's depicted by the yellow line we were just talking about, the 440 contour. The reasons for the relief are not clear in the submission, however, appear to relate to potential concerns as to effects on the Millbrook land. Under the operative plan, the land is identified on planning map 26 as Rural General Zone. I've already mentioned the fact that we will be calling landscape and planning evidence. This isn't in my submissions, but perhaps if I could just summarise that. Essentially, we think that we've got to, between the Millbrook position and Council's latest position, a fairly close position as to where the boundary should be. And that has certainly evolved through the different analysis of the different landscape architects. But what I've done in my submissions is just work through the background and where we've got to date with the different positions so we can see how it has evolved. Paragraph 12. In the Williamson further submission, she supports the findings of the Wakatipu Basin Landscape Study and the Council's Section 32 analysis of Chapter 24, which identified the land as precinct. The submission notes that these findings are based upon sound landscape and planning analysis for the relevant areas and reflect the nature of the land having capacity to absorb effects of further rural living subdivision and development. In contrast, the Millbrook submission does not refer to any planning or landscape analysis or evidence so as to justify why the notified zoning is opposed and the amenity zone is more appropriate. The Williamson submission notes that the most efficient and effective use of the land is for future rural living and development use, and therefore it should be identified as precinct as notified, and the entirety of the Millbrook submission was opposed for these reasons. At the initial Topic 14 hearing, Mr. Vivian presented evidence on behalf of Williamson in respect of the original submission on the variation, and that evidence supported the precinct line as notified. Mr. Vivian was not aware of the Millbrook submission as it had not been notified. His evidence will explain how he was presented with the Millbrook submission by the panel at the hearing and questioned about the proposed Millbrook zone boundary line on the 440 contour. He was questioned on the spot and without the benefit of any landscape assessment. Since the hearing, Mr. Vivian has had the opportunity to revisit the site with Mr. Quinn, and relying on Mr. Quinn's detailed assessment and expert opinion, he has arrived at a slightly different conclusion than the one he presented at the hearing. His evidence concludes that the best planning outcome for the land is to accept the Millbrook and Williamson submissions in part by positioning the precinct zone boundary in the location assessed and drawn by Mr. Quinn, which will be presented in his evidence. If I just pause there, this plan here, which is Appendix 1 to Mr. Quinn's evidence, he'll take you through this in detail, but just to assist with my submissions, you'll see that the blue line is still Williamson's boundary line. The red line is Mr. Quinn's recommended precinct boundary line. The green line is the lifestyle precinct as notified. And the purple line is Ms. Gilbert's latest precinct boundary line. You can also see below that purple line of Ms. Gilbert's the location of the water race, which lines up with the yellow line on the first plan you received from me and that's the location of the water race and the 440 contour. Paragraph 20. The Williamson land is located within LCU 6 Whanganui Hills. The Wakatipu Basin Study identified LCU 6 as being suited to absorb additional rural residential development. The Williamson submission expressed support for the variation, including the proposed minimum and average lot sizes and the description of LCU 6. Since the initial Topic 14 hearing, Williamson has taken expert landscape and planning advice regarding location of the precinct boundary on the land and how this could be amended to address concerns raised by the panel, submitters and the council. The expert analysis that led to that advice is outlined in the evidence of Mr. Quinn and Mr. Vivian. Mr. Vivian's evidence concludes that the best planning outcome for the land is to accept the Millbrook and Williamson submissions in part by positioning the precinct zone boundary in the location assessed and drawn by Mr. Quinn. That line will be produced by him and is not considerably different in location compared to the council's latest position and Millbrook's position. However, it is well supported by slope-sensitive expert analysis by Mr. Quinn. The adoption of Mr. Quinn's line will result in the deletion of part of the landscape feature line and will require consequential amendment to Schedule 24.8 and Schedule 24 LCU mapping and 24.8 LCU 6 Whanganui Hills description. Millbrook position. Leading up to this hearing, we've consulted with Millbrook regarding the location of the precinct zone boundary with a view to reaching agreement. Council for Millbrook advised me that Millbrook has carefully considered its position in respect to the landscape feature that is the ridge line which lies northwest, southeast in the vicinity of its boundary with Williamson and the ongoing integrity of that landform in terms of relief that it sought. The relief sought by Millbrook in its submission is that the precinct be removed from both parcels of land identified on the plan as the pink area above the 440 contour. Millbrook has since advised that it is content for the upper limit to be raised to the 475 contour, which it considers is consistent with zoned development on the eastern side of the ridgeline. Millbrook Resort Zone R16 activity area, and that activity area is shown on Appendix A of Mr. Quinn's attachment. The boundary line proposed by Mr. Quinn following his assessment is between the 440 contour and the 475 contour, and a plan showing the location of Mr. Quinn's line was presented to Millbrook and it has confirmed support of his boundary line. And I see Mr. Edmonds is here. Mr. Gordon from Millbrook advised that Mr. Edmonds would attend today and confirm Millbrook's position. Council's position. The Council's Section 42A recommendation in respect of Williamson's submission was that it is accepted in part to the extent that the precinct is retained as notified. Mr. Langman states in his evidence that the submission has been considered by Council's landscape expert and he supports the precinct as notified without any changes to the precinct as requested by Williamson. Mr. Langman also noted that no site-specific infrastructure, traffic or ecology issues were raised by council witnesses in relation to the Williamson submission. Mr. Langman relied on Ms. Gilbert's assessment of the submission in her evidence. Ms. Gilbert's evidence noted that the extent of the precinct identified for LCU 6 is very similar to the Williamson request in Stage 1, but not identical. She states that the LCU boundary is consistent with that applied throughout the remainder of the unit and follows the crest of the ridgeline landform. Ms. Gilbert notes that the Williamson zoning request appears to deviate from the ridgeline crest landform to that to adopt and that to adopt a different methodology in this location raises issues of consistency and could potentially lead to adverse landscape character and visual amenity effects in relation to LCU 8 Speargrass Flat. On that basis, Ms Gilbert opposed the relief sought in the submission to move the precinct boundary, subsequently rezoning additional land as precinct, and delete the landscape feature. In her evidence, Ms Gilbert notes that the LCU boundary is notified, and therefore precinct, mapping methodology applied to this portion of LCU is consistent with that applied throughout the remainder of the unit. And in other elevated landscape units, such as Dalefield, and follows the crest of the ridge landform. And I've included the extract from her evidence there. Ms Gilbert's evidence addresses the submissions of Maloney and Nackerville, which opposed the identification of the precinct throughout Mooney Road and sought amenity zone instead. Ms Gilbert notes in her evidence that their reasoning would appear to focus on water quality, traffic and reverse sensitivity and wastewater issues, and that rural character is also mentioned, albeit somewhat obliquely. In defending the notified line, Ms Gilbert references the Wakatipu Basin study and notes that the study found, in relation to LCU 6, generally the area reads as a rural residential landscape in which buildings are reasonably well integrated by landform and vegetation. Whilst larger, more rural lots are evident overall, the amenity plantings through tend to contribute to parkland rather than a working rural landscape impression. Ms Gilbert opposed the rezoning request and concluded that this means that while there are some productive properties present within the unit, they do not dominate the character of the area. Rather, a reasonably attractive rural lifestyle land use tends to typify the landscape character of LCU 6. Within such a context, and bearing in mind the relatively visually discrete nature of the majority of the unit and its sympathetic landform patterning, additional rural residential development is considered to be appropriate from a landscape perspective. In my opinion, the consideration of landscape-driven assessment criteria that will be required as part of any future subdivision application within the precinct will ensure that development is responsive to the site-specific circumstances and the visual amenity of neighbouring properties. The landscape-driven assessment criteria can provide confidence that future subdivisions will be evaluated cognizant of the landscape context in which they are located. Ms Gilbert also considered the Millbrook submission, seeking to restrict the extent of the precinct in parts of LCU 6 adjacent to Millbrook in her evidence, even though the submission had not been notified. She found that virtually all of the southwestern portion of the Millbrook Resort is above the 440 contour, thus rendering an argument of visual prominence of development above the 440 contour somewhat curious. She concluded that the landscape feature setback requirement for all subdivision, to be a restricted discretionary activity as a minimum with landscape-driven assessment will safeguard the visual amenity and landscape character of the Millbrook zone, such that the suggested 440 contour line restriction is not considered necessary. Overall, Ms Gilbert's evidence strongly supported the precinct line as notified. However, following the Topic 14 hearing, Ms Gilbert prepared a brief of evidence in reply, dated 10 August 2018, where she changed her view regarding the location of the precinct boundary line. Ms Gilbert notes in her reply evidence that the panel queried the extent of the precinct at the eastern end of LCU 6, specifically in relation to the steep land separating the Mooney Road Basin from Millbrook. Ms Gilbert considered that on reflection, the boundary line should be adjusted in this location, as depicted in Figure 5 and 6 of her evidence. She justifies this change in position by noting that in considering the effects in relation to Bendemeer, she also reviewed the precinct mapping in this location and closely examined detailed elevation, contour and slope analysis mapping together with site photographs. With respect to the steeper land separating the Moonee Road Basin from Millbrook, she amended the precinct line to run along the base of the steeper landform, resulting in a steeper in the steeper land being identified as amenity. Mr Quinn has considered the location of Miss Gilbert's line in detail and has also closely examined the site topography, landscape features and surrounding views into the site. He considers that the line should be located in a slightly different position to that proposed by Miss Gilbert. His evidence considers the areas where the two experts' lines diverge, and he explains his assessment and rationale for the divergence. Miss Gilbert also considered whether small portions of steeper land to the west of the amended area should also be excluded from the precinct, but concluded, "In my opinion, the very limited scale, extent, and the fragmented patterning of these steeper slopes, together with the patterning of existing rural residential development, which sees buildings through these fragmented steeper areas, albeit on localised elevated land that is of easier contour, suggests a reduced landscape sensitivity. Further, the precinct assessment criteria that promote the retention of existing landform patterns and the retirement and restoration of steep slopes and require the consideration of visual effects and views from public places and neighbouring properties, in combination with the landscape feature setback, will ensure the precinct is appropriate in these discrete locations." This reasoning and conclusion is consistent with Mr Quinn's opinion. A further statement of evidence was prepared by Mr Langman, dated 15 October 2018, for the purposes of this hearing. Mr Langman addresses the Williamson further submission and notes that the area of concern identified in the further submission is impacted by Miss Gilbert's view in her reply evidence. Mr Langman considers that the zone boundary proposed by Miss Gilbert is the most appropriate for achieving the objectives and policies of the plan. Mr Vivian disagrees with this view and prefers Mr Quinn's zone boundary. Mr Langman also notes that the restricted discretionary activity status provided for in Reply Rule 24.4.5 and assessment under Reply Rule 24.7.3 are sufficient to manage the adverse effects of built form on landscape character and amenity in the area as a result of the precinct zoning. This position is consistent with Mr Vivian's opinion, and his evidence on the protection afforded by the restricted discretionary status and assessment matters. In conclusion, at the previous Topic 14 hearing, Williamson sought to retain precinct zoning as notified by Council in respect to the land. Council has now changed its position to support in part submission request to remove the precinct from elevated parts of the land. The question is whether the precinct should be removed from the upper slopes, and if so, to what extent. The relevant objectives and policies relating to this matter are noted in Mr. Langman's evidence. Mr. Langman notes that these objectives and policies seek to protect, maintain, and enhance landscape and visual amenity values, including providing for activities where they protect, maintain or enhance landscape values of the character units in Schedule 24.8. Williamson supports these directives, and Mr. Vivian concludes in his evidence that these objectives and policies would be better served by lowering the precinct boundary to exclude the upper and steeper parts of the land. Should the proposed variation zoning structure be adopted, on the basis of the evidence before you, presented by Mr. Vivian and Mr. Quinn, it is entirely appropriate in this instance to recommend the precinct boundary is located in the position illustrated by Mr. Quinn. Jurisdiction for the relief sought to amend the position of the precinct boundary as depicted by Mr. Quinn is provided for by the submissions that I've listed. in that final paragraph of my submissions.
Thank you. Summarising your submissions, you stand or fall on the landscape position whether we prefer Ms. Gilbert to Ms. Quinn or vice versa?
Essentially, yes.
Before you arrived, Quinn and Mr. Vivian were listening to Mr. Hill, who was giving us the landowner's perspective. Had you arrived before then?
Not Mr.
Hill. Oh, well, no. Well, in that case, we had a view from Mr. Hill providing us the neighbouring landowner's perspective, in effect advancing the case that there should be no precinct on Mooney Road. Now, putting aside the landscape rationale for that, his major issue was traffic related, and having looked at the council's traffic evidence, it appears to support the substance of his concern that narrow country lane, as he put it, cannot stand the additional development that would be facilitated by a precinct zoning. And I'd invite you your response.
Well, I have referred in my submissions to the fact that council hadn't raised any traffic issues in respect of this submission, Williamson's submission, and that was from, I think, the Section 42A report, and I wasn't aware of any expert traffic evidence having been presented to the contrary. Was he referring to some expert?
He was advancing his own concerns, which are clearly not an expert view, but it prompted me to reread Mr. Smith's 42A report, where he clearly does support his reasoning, clearly would support a good grounds for concern, and in the same way that I put Mr. Vivian on the spot, asking him about a submission he had no idea about, and he gave us his best answer on the spot, which we appreciated. I think I need to give you the opportunity to respond to that concern, because it's clearly not an issue that you've addressed, and to the extent that you're able, you can give me whatever response you or your team feel able to give me. I'm going to ask the same question for Mr. Langman, but that's by the by. So he's got time to think about the answer.
Well, I did. It was the 42A report that I referred to, where Mr. Langman stated that in his evidence the submission has been considered. Mr. Langman also notes that no site-specific infrastructure, traffic or ecology issues were raised by council witnesses in relation to the Williamson submission. So I think that's as far as we can take it, unless Mr. Vivian has something specific he can add from his planning expertise perspective. But I'd certainly been relying on council's position in that respect.
And Mr. Vivian, just while the iron's hot, you got anything to add?
The only things I would add is, in this particular location, there's a number of unformed legal roads that could be utilised for alternative access to the Mooney's Road Basin. And I was just looking at the...
Would that have any landscape effects?
Well, interesting you ask that. Just on some evidence on that. Legal roads in the district plan are unzoned. Therefore, permitted baseline would suggest that you can do any amount of earthworks you want within those legal road boundaries.
I don't think chapter 29 is written quite that way.
Okay. Well, at least under the
I'm trying to get to grips with it, but I'm pretty sure that...
Yeah, under the operative district plan, at least, legal roads, essentially, you can do anything on it with council's permission, you know.
And you've got those significant setbacks from roads in the present.
Yes. I was just looking at the assessment criteria for the lifestyle precinct for subdivision. Accessways are one of the discretions listed, but it doesn't appear that property access and roading is a listed discretion, so that certainly would give the council, if they had any concerns about access to part of the lifestyle zone being subdivided, they could in fact decline their application on that basis.
Sorry, just while you're on that point, you said that there were other unformed legal roads that could be formed to access that area.
Yeah.
Have you made any assessment as to whether they're feasible in that extent? I mean, I would suggest that possibly not.
If you go to Mr. Quinn's second appendix one, it actually shows a legal road that goes from Moonies Road through to Mulligan's Road.
Yes.
And one from Mooney Road down to Speargrass Flat Road. And Mooney Road itself actually goes all the way along that ridge line. So,
does actually, according to the council's mapping. It extends beyond the current formation, but it doesn't extend infinitely.
Right, okay.
Point is whether it's feasible to form council standard, I don't.
Yeah, I have
that
opinion at all.
Somewhat fanciful.
It does look steep in some places. Yes.
The contours are very close together.
Yeah, especially down towards Mountain Road.
That was all I had. Careful.
Just before we move on, Mr. Edmonds, a simple claim to ask you, can you confirm that Millbrook agreed with the position as Mr. Roberts?
Yeah, right. I can confirm.
Exactly what Mr. Roberts was saying. Good to you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name's Stephen Quinn. If you like, I read my evidence from the start. But
I think we can take your introduction as read and you can probably go on to two problems.
Sure. Thank you. So, two scope of evidence. The purpose of this evidence is to assist the hearing panel on matters within my expertise of landscape architecture and landscape planning in relation to submission 2822 on the proposed district plan. In relation to this submission, I've been asked by Ms. Williamson to prepare evidence regarding the position of the line between the lifestyle precinct and the amenity zone as it relates to her property. I consider that the precinct boundary should be drawn as per the red line on the appendices to my evidence. I have read the supplementary evidence of Kerry Vivian, which you have received in respect of the background, the Millbrook submission, Skip Williamson's submissions, and the Council's supplementary evidence. I do not repeat this information here, but refer to it as being my understanding of the planning context. I have walked over the part of Ms. Williamson's property that is subject to the Millbrook submission and have undertaken visual analysis towards Bendemeer and towards and from Speargrass Flat Road and Harrowtown Lake Hayes Road. Photographs of the relevant and visible parts of the property from vantage points on these public roads are included as Appendix 3 of this evidence, which is included in the bundle of attachments. The viewpoint locations are shown in the map included as Appendix 2 to this evidence, which also shows my recommended precinct line. I consider that the natural character of the steep land immediately below the ridge line would be better protected by being within the amenity zone rather than the precinct as was notified. However, I also consider that there is additional land that is above the water race or the 440 line as per the Millbrook submission that has the capacity to absorb the type of development anticipated by the precinct. The majority of this land is included within Ms. Gilbert's proposed precinct line, which is, as Ms. Robb explained, the purple line on the plan, included in both my Appendix 1 and shown in the panoramas, included as my Appendix 4. And just to stop at that point and just to clarify, if I may, that there are two maps included as Appendix 1. The difference being between the first and second one is that the second one includes the contour information, which is the half metre contours, lighter contours from the council's GIS database. And it also picks up the points of my line, the contour information. And also the first appendix, one, includes the newer aerial photograph that has been taken in 2018, this year, earlier this year. Just to continue, this line includes undulating land above the water race. My line, shown as a red line in the same appendices, includes a greater degree of this undulating topography before the steeply rising slopes ascend. This includes areas containing gullies that are sunken between elevated spurs. I consider that my line better corresponds to the topography that is evident within the property. Whilst I have not viewed Skip Williamson's property from Bendemeer, as noted above, I have looked towards Bendemeer from the parts of the property where the precinct line was notified and where it is recommended to be by Ms. Gilbert and myself. I've also looked at the photograph from Bendemeer included as Appendix 2 in Ms. Gilbert's right of reply dated 10th of August. I consider there could be visibility of development anticipated by the precinct as recommended by both Ms. Gilbert's and my lines from a distance of approximately 3.5 kilometres or more. I consider that the adverse landscape and visual effects that could be anticipated by the precinct as recommended by myself to be low, and the difference between this line and Ms. Gilbert's line would be of a very slight degree. I have particularly considered the landscape and visual effects on Speargrass Flat Road and Harrowtown Lake Hayes Road, as these are the public vantage points that could be most affected by development on the upper slopes, as could be anticipated by the precinct as notified. This is due to the proximity of the roads combined with their visibility towards these slopes. It is noted that the stretch of Harrowtown Lake Hayes Road and the area that is adjacent the adjacent entrance to Lake Hayes Reserve North has that has visibility towards the slope is a popular photography location with spectacular views over the lake towards Coronet Peak, particularly with the sun setting behind. The upper hillocks of the Wharahuanui Hills are in the mid-ground of these views. My visual analysis on the site and from Speargrass Flat Road and the Arrowtown Lake Hayes Road has determined that the steeper and more elevated land is more visually sensitive to the effects of development, whereas the land contained below my line has capacity to absorb the type of development anticipated by the precinct. My line excludes a spur located to the immediate east of the unformed legal road that heads in a north direction from the unformed part of Moody Road that is within the property. And just to stop there, I have marked the unformed legal road that runs north from Moody Road on my both Appendix 1 plans. You can see in those plans the spur that I'm talking about, which is immediately to the left-hand side or to the east of that unformed road. The panoramic images included in Appendix 4 to this evidence are taken from the spur towards the north and east to show the locations of the precinct as per the Millbrook submission, the Council's evidence, and the line I support. As is evident from these images, my line provides a clear delineation between the shallower and less steep land associated with the Moody Road Basin and the steeper and more elevated landform. The land that is included in my precinct is that associated with gullies, whereas the spurs and hillocks that are visible from a wider catchment, including public roads, are excluded. The viewpoints taken from Speargrass Flat Road and Arrowtown Lake Hayes Road, included in my evidence as Appendix 3, show that the land included within my precinct is not visible from these vantage points. Given the reduced visibility from surrounding public roads, it is my opinion that these areas are less visually sensitive than the more elevated landforms below the ridge line that are excluded from my recommended precinct. I make the following particular observations with respect to my recommended precinct line, where it contrasts with Ms. Gilbert's recommended line. To the left of my Appendix 1 plan, and if I may, I'll just point to the first area that I'm talking about, being the area that is just to the left-hand side of the plan of the unformed legal road that I talked about before. I have included here a small amphitheatre created by the spur to the east and the small hillock forms to the west. This line approaches the ridge line and extends above the notified precinct line, but is not so close to the ridge that it will be visible from Elegance Road. It is also not visible from Speargrass Flat Road. I consider that this area has the capacity to absorb development anticipated by the precinct. To the immediate east of the spur, I mentioned before, is another sunken area between this spur and another smaller spur further to the east. Ms. Gilbert's line runs through this depression, including through several small incised gullies. My line follows around the back of these small gullies at a contour line where the gentler sloping topography starts to ascend more steeply, before joining Ms. Gilbert's line at the toe of the small spur to the east. This area is not visible from Speargrass Flat Road or Arrowtown Lake Hayes Road and is screened by the spur from the former part of Moody Road. Immediately east of this small spur is a steeply gouged gully where Ms. Williamson has recently undertaken native revegetation. And I just point you back to the plan. This is this little bit here. This is the gully that I'm now talking about, the centre page. Ms. Gilbert's line, it seems to have taken some of this gully, and my line is a little further north, immediately south of the recently planted area as it offers more gently sloping land that is visually contained by topography. To the east of this gully, Ms. Gilwood's and my recommended lines deviate slightly. My line follows closely the topography where the more gradually sloping land starts to rise more steeply, whereas there does not appear to be any obvious delineation in the line Ms. Gilbert has chosen. As with all of the areas I recommend to be within the precinct, they are visually contained, so it's not to be visible from nearby park or roads or from pool development. Conclusions. In a broad sense, the landscape line that separates the precinct from the amenity zone is a line that should separate the visually contained Mooney Road Basin that can absorb development anticipated by the precinct from the visually sensitive hillocks and spurs that should be protected. There are four areas of difference between Ms. Gilbert's line and my line, as noted earlier and shown on the appendices to my evidence. My line includes additional gently sloping topography that is visually contained by the topography. I have undertaken visual analysis from these areas within the property and from surrounding roads, and consider that in addition to the precinct recommended by Ms. Gilbert, that these areas also have the capacity to be within the precinct.
Mr. McHenry, do you have any questions?
Thank you. Can you just clarify for me, just looking at these viewpoints, is it possible to see the water race at all from any of these viewpoints or no? Not at all. Thank you. That's all for me, thank you.
A related question. You said you talked about in your evidence that from these viewpoints you can't see the precinct line that you're recommending. How high would a structure inside the just inside the precinct line need to be before it was visible from these viewpoints?
Well, if you were to take a structure on the boundary line, it would. I can't tell you the exact height that it would need to be, but I can say that when I drew my line and when I considered my line, that as I was walking along the property, I did bear in mind that obviously there would be height of development contained within the precinct. And took that into account so that the line as I have drawn does take into account the height, and so my line is certainly not visible from those locations, but that is not to say that development below that line would be visible, because I have taken that into account as I drew the line. Not to a specific height, but I have drawn the line not just at where development could be visible, but where development below that line would also not be visible.
Can you give me a sense, like understanding that you haven't done a zone of visibility analysis. Are we talking 5 metre structure, 10 metre structure, before it would poke out over the top?
I guess I was in considering it. I would think possibly something above. Between 5 and 10 metres might start to become visible if it were that structure were on the boundary, but that's certainly not to say that a structure would necessarily be built on the boundary either, considering that a consent would still be a restricted discretion you've considered, so it would be required. Maybe come away from the boundary.
Thank you. And the last question I have is that Commissioner Smith could doubtless tell me the answer to this, but I'll ask you, have it on the record. The scale of these maps is listed as NTS. What does that stand for?
Oh, not to scale.
Oh,
yeah,
not
so, to scale. So it's not to any particular scale. Yeah.
All right. In that case, what sort of distance is there between, first of all, between Ms. Gilbert's line and the water race, and secondly, between, to the extent that you pushed the line further up the hill, how much land is there to play with above the race, distance-wise? And I'm not saying down to the last millimetre.
Yeah.
An approximation.
Well, I mean, as you can see, obviously, the line varies from the water race, but I would say an approximation would be that Ms. Gilbert's line varies between maybe 50, slightly less than 50, 50 to 100 metres from the water race in a flat distance. My line varies approximately another, in parts, another 50 metres, maybe 50 to 70 metres in places. Well, in some places it varies very little, and in some places it's...
So looking at this big, well, I won't try and describe it, this bit, that's 50 to 70 metres, that one.
This one here?
The largest difference.
Correct. That is my best guess without having a scale to refer to.
That's all I need, just a sense of the distance. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn.
Yeah, thank you. So, if I'm correct in understanding, it's your view that you cannot see any of the land above your line from any of the viewpoints that you've identified, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Just in regard to viewpoint 7, I can see a dark patch at the right-hand end of that ridge, which is corresponds to a patch of pine trees.
Yes.
And that you can quite clearly see land directly behind those pine trees, and you can certainly see land in front of the pine trees.
Yes.
If I can see land directly behind that, doesn't it follow that, from my understanding of that location, that I could see parts of those lands above the line? From that viewpoint, from Lake Hayes approach?
No, I don't think so. So I think what I consider is that from this viewpoint that you're talking about, those pine trees, there's this cluster of pine trees on the bottom right-hand side of my appendix. The small patch of land that you can see behind those pine trees is this spur, which is just next to the unformed legal road.
You can see a saddle between two, on the photos, you can see a saddle between two things, and you can see land. I suppose to take this from another view, did you walk the exact line of your proposed, and were you able to see
the road
from that
position? No. I walked my line as well as Ms. Gilbert's line. I walked between the two and viewed out to those viewpoints from those lines, and was not able to see the roads back from those viewpoints. So in reference to viewpoint location 7, consider what you can see there, the upper slopes of the hillocks that have been excluded from my line, and that my line is tucked below that. Although, to not a large degree.
Thank you. I have done a summary at the start of my evidence. I was just intending to read that and rest is read.
Yes, thank you.
This evidence details the background to the submissions being heard here today. At the first hearing on this matter, I was asked by a panel member in my opinion as to the location of the lifestyle precinct boundary in light of the Marlborough Country Club submission. I answered that I didn't have a problem with it being around the 440 metre contour and that I wouldn't like to see development above that contour. Through the failure to quickly notify the submission for further submission, I now have the opportunity to revisit my earlier answers with reliance on expert landscape evidence presented by Mr. Quinn. As a result, I've arrived at a slightly different conclusion. My evidence concludes that the best planning outcome for the subject site is to accept Millbrook's and Williamson's submissions in part by positioning the lifestyle precinct subzone in position assessed for host Quinn. This will result in the deletion of part of the landscape feature line and will require consequential amendment to schedule 24.8 and 24.8 U6 Farringley Hills description. I don't think there's any need for me to read anything else in my evidence. The issues have been very well traversed.
Yes, your evidence is relying on Mr. Quinn's.
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. This might have been better for Mr. Quinn, but perhaps between you, what is the area on the Williamson property that would be zoned precinct based on what Mr. Quinn's line?
Can you remember?
It was 90-something hectares, which is approximately half.
I've got it on an email somewhere if you'd like me to get the exact figure.
Yes, please. And a comparison, if you have it, with Ms. Gilbert's line.
Stage 1 QLDC rural lifestyle zone is 68 hectares and the Williamson's submission requested that be increased to 111 hectares. Stage 2, the QLDC lifestyle precinct as notified was 115 hectares. Ms. Gilbert's amended boundary takes that down to 94 hectares. And Mr. Quinn's amended boundary took that to 97 hectares, but I think a little bit's been added, so probably closer to 100 hectares.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner
only to thank Mr. Moody. When I asked you at the hearing, I wasn't aware that exhibition hadn't been notified, and I thought it was rather odd that you hadn't commented
on
it.
Yeah, I thought you did make a comment about that at the hearing.
No, everything's perfectly clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, the opportunity to apply, if you like, give you 5 minutes to prepare for what is Mr. Norman has to bar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think just if I respond to the Hill.
Yes.
Submission and then the Williams submission. So the council filed a memorandum with additional information for the hearing panel on the 27th of July 2018, and that's referred to as the second memorandum of council for QLDC, which outlines the Lake Hayes catchment and shows the notified area of the Whareahuanui Hills intersecting with the catchment outline. And I think that responds to your question of the submitter as to whether the Whareahuanui Hills were actually within the Lake Hayes catchment. So there is an intersection between it, but it's not complete, that the whole of the Whareahuanui Hills is within the Lake Hayes catchment. As you'll be aware, I set out at 3.17 and 3.18 of my reply, my view of the potential for downzoning in the Lake Hayes and Mill Creek catchments. Based on a precautionary approach regarding the science around the impact of rural residential activities on Lake Hayes water quality, and that would impact some, if not all, of the land of Whareahuanui Hills, including the Williamson land as well. Moving on to Williamson in relation to traffic, my evidence states that no issues are raised in relation to the submission of Maloney and Nanskerville. And subsequently held to downzone the land. So Mr. Smith does note that it might be difficult through the resource consent process to identify who should be responsible for upgrades to the road if the zoning does go ahead. He considers that it's better for the council to complete upgrades before rezoning and seek to recoup the costs as permissible under the LGA using development contributions. In my Section 42A report at 20.5 and 20.6, I set out the restricted discretionary matters that were also referred to by Mr. Vivian. Just in relation to the restricted discretionary matters and assessment criteria in relation to roading and access. I still maintain my view that those are capable of being there to turn down subdivision if safety as an issue in any particular circumstance. And I think the thing with the rezoning of that area is that all the development isn't going to take place at once, and the council will probably at some stage need to undertake upgrades to that infrastructure. And I do note that it's difficult to form a view on the landscape evidence that's been submitted just in relation to Williamson. One of the things that I would note, if the panel was minded to seek a response from Ms. Gilbert, that one of the things that I noted in looking at that is that the visual analysis took place in terms of mid and long distance views, but in terms of Mooney Road itself, there's a paper road that runs through, if you might call that the Mooney Road extension, which would also be a relevant point of view in terms of views from public spaces as well. So that's something that I would probably ask her to consider if she was to provide a response.
Is there any council wished to have Ms Gilbert here, they could have had Ms Gilbert here, but given the timelines that we're working to, we could have prolonged it by asking for additional material. I just raise that matter now. Do you have any questions, Mr Mullen?
No, thank you.
Mr Robinson?
One question. Mr Hill didn't know how big the road reserve was.
Yes.
Is there in fact enough land available to upgrade the road?
That's an answer I can come back to you probably reasonably quickly with in terms of that, but there could be issues in terms of existing infrastructure like telephone poles that might impact on that.
I thought we'd already asked that question.
And didn't get an answer.
We could probably get an answer tomorrow. We could provide an answer very, very quickly.
The answer we were given in the memorandum that was provided during the hearing was Mr. Smith's best estimate of the formed road width.
Yes. That
based on aerial imagery.
Yes.
Which is demonstrably larger than Mr. Hill has just suggested, given evidence, or wider. I'm saying approximately 4.5 to 5 metres for most of the length of the corridor.
Although Mr. Hill did say that was the gravel width. And the aerial photo showed the gravel, not the seal.
Yeah.
the other implication as well is obviously the road reserve will be wider than the formed road, so it's potentially.
That was the question that we actually wanted answered. Yes. We presume that that can be measured off the GIS quite quickly.
Yes.
No pressure, Mr. Clark. While you're thinking about that, the other question I have for you, we were told that the subdivision code would require 7 metres for up to 150 dwellings. I think Mr. Vivian's analysis would suggest that if there are 97 hectares on Williamson, accepting Mr. Quinn's line, that's, I think, an average of 1 hectare. 90. How many houses or residential properties could actually be put on Mooney Road given this, either Ms. Gilbert's or Mr. Quinn's recommendation as to where the line is at the top of the Williamson property? And if it's more than 150, how wide would the road have to be then to meet the code of the subdivision code?
I can't answer that off the without measuring that area. I think the evidence referred to, traffic evidence referred to an area of up to 100 dwellings within that area to be rezoned, and acknowledged the ability to construct additional residential unit. And so the traffic estimate was approximately 200. There's around 200 households within that area.
So the working assumption is 200 households.
Yes.
So the next question is, what does the subdivision code require for a dead-end road with 200 households on it?
Is that something it would assist to have a written response on?
It probably would actually, but we'd certainly need that before the end of the week.
Mr. Barr has just measured the approximate road width on GIS, and it looks to be 12 metres.
that perhaps could be done with more certainty and included in that response to.
Yes, yeah. Measured at various spots along the road, it looks to be 12 or 12.5 metres.
I don't have any comments to make, sir. I'd like to point out, you're probably, and the panel have probably worked this out for themselves by now, paragraph 8.9 of my evidence, the last sentence in paragraph 8.9 on page 18, page 16, sorry, in terms of the presentation. I've said rule 35.4.5 prevails of the noise rules. It should say over the noise rules in chapter 36, and it should refer to chapter 24, not chapter 25. I just noticed that this morning. That might make a bit more sense to you now. Besides that, I don't have any other comments. I've considered Mr. Tapper's submission and
Mr. Barr, I wonder if you could explain to me how the standards in your reply version for informal airports work on the basis that obviously in the lifestyle precinct it's discretionary and the aircraft operators are seeking amelioration of those standards. Now these standards, so there are three standards. It says informal airports that comply with the standards shall be permitted activities. Non-compliance is discretionary. One standard, not exceeding two flights a day. One, the minimum separation of 500 metres, and then emergency landings. Are these cumulative or If you have one flight a day, do you still need to be 500 metres? How do these standards, how are they intended to work rather than?
I was listening and I was also trying to pull up the chapter. They, can you just articulate for me what you mean by them being cumulative? They should be. Each flight or each movement should stand on its own.
So, well, the point being that the third standard is emergency landings. Do emergency landings have to be not more than two a day and 500 metres from?
No. Those ideally should stand alone, nearly as a separate rule or as their own separate limb to the rule. Some people have wondered if emergency activities needed to comply with those standards, but that's not the intent at all.
Now, would the same apply in the precinct zone?
Can I just interrupt?
Yes.
If we look at standard 2110.2 and the decision's version of the plan for the rural zone, is that the standard that you were intending to apply in the Waikato places amenity zone? But of course it was notified before you had the decisions.
It probably does, if that, there's a few things happening like
where
that.
Mr. Robinson's queries, I think, might have been corrected.
Yeah.
Can you give me that number again, please?
21.... What standard is that, Mr. Chair? It's 21.5.
21.10.2.
Yes.
So the distance only applies.
It's on page 23.
Mm. Yes, that looks a bit better. If I may also, I've just looked up the subdivision code, and up to 150 dwelling units requires a 15 metre legal width and a 5.5 to 5.7 metre floor width.
Good, we'll get that in the memorandum from the council.
So does the same logic suggest that emergency landings should be permitted anywhere in the precinct zone?
Yes, and that's consistent with Chapter 22, I think. The decisions version separated that as a separate rule, as a permitted activity rule. And then in the rural lifestyle zone, informal airports are identified as a discretionary activity, and the silent in the rural residential zone, which earlier that being that it's not online.
Yes, I don't think if anyone's trying to put down an emergency, they're not going to be applying for resource consent. That's reasonably safe to assume.
And one would reasonably assume that it won't be happening every week.
That's right.
You hope it won't be. And in terms of the logic of the council's position, as I understand your evidence, drawing on Dr. Charles' evidence, it is effectively that the noise standard is not adequate for a small number of flights that, in terms of the annoyance factor.
That's correct, yep.
Accepting that there are, and as I understood the evidence, it was that at about 10 flights a day, you would be hitting 500 metres separation requirement under the noise standards, scaling down. Approximately,
yes,
depending on the topography, of course.
Yes, that's correct, sir. And also tempering that would be a sort of a perfect theoretical situation where there aren't other environmental factors that would mean that compliance might not be able to be attained. So,
like Mr. Tapper's chainsaw over it.
That's right.
And is there a case at the far end that Mr. Tapper is talking about, when you're down to one flight a day, that 500 metres is a bit over the top?
I think there's a resource consent process for people to go through if that's the case. I think there's too high a potential for, I wouldn't say liberties to be taken on a permitted status of two movements or one flight per day, but there's certainly too many potentially intervening factors for the council to be, or from my perspective, relying on Dr. Charles' evidence to be satisfied that you could have a permitted status of one flight from most sites, even with a reduced setback, because there could be a higher likelihood of not complying with the rule, and then there would be more complicated enforcement or monitoring proceedings. That's where it comes back to myself being in support of the 500 metre setback, because there's a greater certainty of compliance. And if you're nearly there but you don't comply, then a resource consent wouldn't be too difficult. That doesn't make it, I've sympathised with Mr. Tapper, where he might just want to go for a recreational flight on a Sunday afternoon and choose to land at his mate's place if he's home. But the balance of issues that arise in this district relating to people undertaking, especially in particular helicopter flights from private property, it's normally not quite so simplistic, and there's recurring themes. So we think, or my view is, that a more conservative approach is justified.
Thank you, Mr.
from that, would you see any potential to differentiate between helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft? Just picking up on your last comment there.
Not really, because anecdotally, or not speaking as an expert, but more from a planning perspective, that Chapter 36 allows a penalty for the sort of nuisance effect you can have from helicopter noise that fixed-wing aircraft don't have, but you could effectively land a helicopter in a place that's more sympathetic to a neighbouring property, whereas a fixed-wing aircraft, you need to come in and land in a certain direction that suits, and you don't quite have the same flexibility of manoeuvring, so there's a greater chance you might have to fly over someone's a neighbouring property's roof at 30 metres or 10 metres to land there. So it doesn't really get fixed-wing aircraft operators out of the woods either. So when you boil those sorts of issues down, I think that the rule as it stands is relatively is the best fit for being able to manage this issue.
My understanding is the chopper limit is 50 dBDM and the fixed wing is 55. Is that the penalty you mean?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Begs the question, what happens to gyrocopters and drones and vertical takeoff craft?
Drones are not aircraft. They're defined not to be aircraft.
Yes, well, but they will be when they're carrying people, probably. But anyway.
Do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
No, I don't have any other questions. Mr. Bunn?
Thanks, sir.
Other than that memorandum, do you have anything you wish to add, Ms. Bailey?
Nothing for me except that we'll provide you with the memorandum by the end of